Welcome to Orchestrated Relationships, a podcast studying relational value. I'm David Homan, your host. Years ago, I formed a community of people called connectors, people who have an innate ability to build and maintain authentic relationships across their personal and professional lives, and who thrive on making connections. The community was formed out of a need to develop a system and a methodology to help relational value be valued. And the most effective way I've found so far is to champion someone else, which is why I have in front of me the incredible Atul Prashar. So welcome.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
So glad to have you here today and to talk about a lot of the incredible work you're doing. Now, you are somebody, your family office is a focus on media, entertainment, and sports. You yourself are a former composer for TV and film, the founder of Sava 360 Ventures, and most importantly for me, and I'd love you to talk about the impact of this project, a philanthropist focused on helping young girls stay in school in India.
Yeah, appreciate you providing this opportunity. You and I both have children, right? We have kids. We've shared many stories. They're wonderful. They're beautiful creatures that were born into what we've been able to provide, and they're, you know, into our homes, and so they have everything they need. Kids around the world sometimes don't have that due to geography or unfortunate circumstances, unhealthy environments, so they have tremendous challenges. So what we're trying to do is, how can we work with these children to, A, help them survive, B, help them thrive, and C, kind of help them be alive in the life they were meant to lead, right? So then one initiative that we kind of saw that we could help and impact is, due to limited and non-functioning toilets in very rural communities of India and non-sanitary napkins, a lot of girls, when they reach the menstruation age, tend to drop out of school. So you amplify that by, there might be north of 20 million kids drop out of school because of the stigma attached to it, the embarrassment, and the improper facilities. So if there are 20 million kids dropping out of school every year, amplify that decades over decades, that creates a huge gap in gender gap in education, A, B, the labor force, and other purposeful and potential life-seeking opportunities, right? So that's what we wanted to mitigate. So we started building these bathrooms, proper bathrooms, so these girls could stay in school, and it's helping. So our aim initially was to partner with some other families and to make this a broader group. It wasn't the right timing for some, so we decided to take it on our own. And it's been wonderful. It's a beautiful, beautiful experience.
I think about why I care an incredible amount about championing a network of diversity and inclusion. Someone asked me this a couple months ago, and I said, the solutions for climate change, the creator of cold fusion, all of these things that should exist in this world do not, because those of privilege maintain their privilege and their status,
right,
as opposed to helping other people maintain their dignity. So I think very strongly that women are smarter than men. And when more women lead in the world and lead the world, we will not have the problems we have today.
Yeah.
So you take country like back home for you in India. If there were millions and millions of women that had stayed educated because their dignity was preserved and they weren't made fun of or ostracized for the one process that keeps civilization going.
Right.
Then we wouldn't be in a situation where a lot of people tell them where their place is, as opposed to show them where they can go and have access to succeed.
Yeah, beautifully said. I love the way you wrap that. Yeah, it's something that happens to half our population. So we can, for what reason? So we can create more life. So why are we putting the improper judgments on it, right? Let's help. Let's help these people get ahead.
So when you think about the type of connections you need to move this forward, not just in India, but as a model for many of the other places around the world, what are the type of connections, what are the type of passions that need to be awakened for people to understand that it takes very little in order to change the direction of an entire life?
Yeah, and the capital isn't it's not a lot, and we want to scale this. Right? Well, I think what we need is operators on the ground who are deeply delved into the communities, because then it can be easier to kind of make a turnkey approach. So then we can scale this. This is needed not just in India, it's needed everywhere. We have 20% of the girls miss school here in the U.S. when they go through this. They don't drop out. Those rates are much lower here. But I want to help. What I need is operators on the ground. We were at a dinner a few weeks ago, and I met someone there that could probably help with that. That would be great. And then we could launch this in different countries. A turnkey approach that would just, here you go, boom, let's get this going. That's what efficientizes the whole thing, and you can help scale this properly.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible project. I'll do everything I can to support it.
Appreciate it, man.
So when you think about building relationships into this project, into a lot of the other ventures, investments, and opportunities that you have, you're somebody who, when people meet with you, often want something from you, as opposed to know what the value is that you could share with them. Or a project like this, which involves a value that, when reciprocated, could actually help millions of girls,
yeah.
as opposed to you help whatever they think is important. So for me, I have a particular approach when I meet people, and I want to understand their connectivity to me. And it's basically vulnerability fishing. So what I will do in any conversation where I want to connect to somebody, and it's not necessarily as organic as when the two of us first met years ago now, I will say something like, they'll go, well, how are you feeling? And as opposed to saying, I'm feeling good, I will say, my three-year-old has decided that I am the warmest thing for him to sleep next to, as long as he keeps spinning around and around in a circle, keeping me awake and him asleep and warm. And I've been up for the last 7 hours, and it's 9 a.m.
Nice.
And then somebody will say to me, you know, I used to tell everyone that my kids sleep great, but they don't.
Yeah.
And then I'll open with a few others, and I'll just share something that I feel gives them a sense of the roundedness of what I actually care about, as opposed to what I want from them.
Mm.
So when you approach meeting people, what are the type of vulnerabilities that you open to?
That's a great question. You know, early on, it was, I'm trying to find the best way to answer this that's meaningful for people listening. So early on, when I was in the music industry, people would ask, well, that would be the entire conversation. I would never learn one thing about them, because they would be fascinated by this versus investment banking is exciting, or nonprofit work is exciting, but I would never learn, because they kept asking questions about this in any group. So I make sure I kind of like don't bring up a lot of what I want to bring, you know, what I work on, so I can learn more about them. And then I plug in. That's why it's efficient, but they don't learn still. I'm not opening up about myself, because I've learned to shut that down, because it leads to other conversations that I never get to learn as much about them. So I need to open up and be better about that.
But if you have an efficiency with how you meet people, then that means that you are demonstrably interested in them.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they do share a vulnerability, do you share back?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if they're in a situation where you feel like it is such a transactional conversation, you're not sure what they do, do you have a way to break through that, to find a common bond?
Honestly, this is not going to be as relevant as it should be, but sports and humor open people up. Then it breaks down a wall, because that's something people can relate to. And then we delve into conversation. That's always worked for me. Humor has always helped me. And I maybe use it as a defensive mechanism sometimes, right? So then I can keep myself relevant in a conversation. But then we open up other portions of pockets of people that, you know, that opens up that vulnerability. I notice that a lot.
I mean, humor is something that is absolutely essential in terms of breaking down barriers. We have this very wonderfully frustrating nuance in my marriage where my wife announced one day she had achieved funny. And
it's
actually true. Like, of the two of us, she is much more funny
than
I am.
That's awesome. I love it.
And she knows it, and everyone knows it. But announcing that she had achieved funny, it was something I had to always strive for, but only one of us could get there.
She sends emails. I remember her email about your birthday. I think it was last year, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and it was brilliant. And it was all, you could tell, the humor was just interjected in. I said, she's great. That was phenomenal.
Absolutely. So we're going to move a little bit forward. I want to understand how humor and sports open up conversations, but I want to actually give you one of my favorite analogies.
Okay.
In terms of breaking the mold of when I'm in a situation where I have to get through to somebody who is I am unable to get through from any normal means of conversation related to them telling me of something that they're doing,
mm-hmm.
and being 100% clear on where they're going to end up and 0% clear on how they're going to get there.
Okay.
So I will quote my favorite South Park episode.
All right.
So I'll paraphrase this for you, but just to give you the context, because I'd love to understand how you approach this in the context of working with people, investing with people, supporting people that don't necessarily understand the amount of work it's going to take to achieve what they want to. Mm. So it goes like this. The lawn gnomes outside Cartman's house start stealing his underpants. And he, and I think it's Dan, it's been, I don't know, 25 years since I saw this right. in real, start to figure out that lawn gnomes come to life and steal their underpants. So they decide to follow them to this underground lair, this cave. And they go, why the F are you stealing my underpants? And this one sort of like senior like management lawn gnome goes, it's very, very simple. And there are these three boards next to each other, step one, two, and three. And they go, step one. And they hold their hands up and it shows the sign. It says, steal underpants. And then they go, step two. And it's blank. They go, step three, profit. And they go, well, that doesn't make any sense. You missed step two. And they go, no, I'm going to explain it again. Because people spend so much time re-explaining what they thought you didn't hear that they're not hearing that you find something flawed in what their logic is.
Sure.
And they repeat the same thing. Step one, steal underpants. Step two, step three, profit.
Awesome.
And when I break people out of the mold and quote something they may or may not have seen or only thought was a was that it was basically a bunch of obscene kids cursing all the time.
Right.
I take them out of a mindset where they know that they weren't listening because I just revealed that for me, their step two is missing. And the step two is actually the hardest part.
Yeah.
Because it would be absolutely incredible if we found a way to take all of the carbon on this planet and get rid of it.
Right.
That would be amazing in terms of profit.
Right.
But the technology to get there and the how of its enacted or even how it's done is still eluding us.
Whoever solves these problems, right? These are trillion-dollar treasures sitting at the end of these, solving these equations, right? Electric vehicles, anything around climate change. A lot of the refugee crisis happened because of climate change, right? The Syrian thing right now is not due to that. That's more of a civil unrest, a political play. But generally, you're going to have an emergence of, I think, 10, 20 million from the sub-Saharan Africa moving into Europe in the next 10 to 15 years because of climate change. So if we can get around solving these things, these are trillion-dollar opportunities. That's why banks are getting on board. When the Paris Climate Agreement was signed, all the bankers were and the corporate leaders were in the room because they wanted to support this with however they could. So I completely agree with you.
And so before we get to your quote, I just want to go back to your discussion earlier about helping these young girls.
Yeah.
Because for me, there's something missing in how I would explain it, which would be, it's not just that you're taking 10, 20 million women back one, two, three generations.
Right.
It's actually, for me, what happens when there is an educated civil society of women who are the backbone of every community.
Yeah.
And what that means in terms of the stability of those communities, what it means for the future of those future children, and what it means in particular for what happens from when you restore common dignity, what happens then to common purpose.
Yeah.
And so for me, whenever you can paint the picture in a way that shows people the actual full impact, they have two choices. They can either steal underpants and have no clue what they do with it, or they can join together and dig into the meat of it, which is not knowing how things get solved, but know that they need to be.
Love it.
So for you, tell me a quote that you live by, something that guides a lot of how you live your life and how you build relationships.
I'll give you a couple, all right?
Great.
Whatever we have time for, and you cut me when you need to. So one simple, and they're simple. I don't need to be extravagant with some of these. So yesterday is not ours to recover, but tomorrow is ours to win or lose. That's first. Number two, simple. Don't have to say something new if you say something true. So what I'm on this hefty quest, and you've known this for a while now, to pump out meaningful content that serves a purpose. So I read, I listen, I debate. I've aggregated a tremendous amount of knowledge that I want to package in a way that I can deliver via podcast, music, and long-form video. I'd like people to absorb this content, add their personal flavor and experiences to it, and then act on it. As well as you can also be the smart person at the dinner table or the smart guy at the water cooler, but then act on it and pass the information forward and do something good. All the problems that we talked about, that's the kind of information I wanted to put out there so people can act on it. Get around fundamentals of finance, as well as explain and bring awareness to some challenges that people are facing in the world, and let's get around it. And then I interject my humor and whatever I do to make it more accessible.
Love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the way we lose the future is complacency. We lose it because of apathy.
Yeah.
We lose it because we believe that having our tribe and our community means that we have enough.
Yeah. You know, one thing, and I don't know if we have time for this, but I would want people to know that you can start small, and it's very simplistic as far as impacting people positively. You and I are big music lovers, right? So let me bring this up. You're a wonder, you play, you do a lot of, you create a lot. I was in the same space for a long time of my life. So I'm going to give you a very simple quote. Do you remember this from the movie Brown Sugar? It's almost 20 years old. You are the perfect verse over a tight beat. Does that resonate with you?
I love that.
Sanaa Lathan, Taye Diggs. And so then this is like 20 years ago. Fast forward a few years later, I'm in the music industry. I'm working, I'm writing music, I'm doing all this stuff. And you know the whole story. Around 2008, 2009, I remember I was walking in Soho with my wife, and I heard someone, I think we were at the Dean and DeLuca. We walked past an H&M or something, and she was humming a song that I thought was mine. So then I wanted to make sure, so I followed her for another block or two. My wife was with me. It wasn't an odd Me Too situation. It was copacetic. And I followed it. It was my song. And it was beautiful because she was going about her day, and she was happy. And she was just singing this tune that I put a lot of time, because I wanted it to be a happy tune. And she was singing it, and when she was interacting with her friends, they were interacting with the way I intended it to be. So these small things, you know, amplify that by the millions who watch that show or any other shows we had done music for. And that's the kind of feeling you get to leave in the world.
Absolutely. So I'll leave you with this thought in collaboration with that, which is, as a composer myself, I've studied a lot about all of the fluff around a piece of music that basically get to the melody you were waiting to hear.
Yeah.
And that woman was listening to the melody that you helped guide her, that she was waiting to hear.
Yeah.
And when you can give people that grounding and give people that melody, what you end up doing is giving them a place to return to that gives them a sense of sanity.
Yeah.
That gives them a sense of pause. Because when we pause from the world around us just enough to regain perspective, we understand what we need and want and what we need to do from it. But when we are constantly running around in a bustle of thinking that being more active means we have more purpose, that buying more things means we have more value, that even hosting lots of people at events without sharing your value system with them makes you popular. These things are all a lie to ourselves, because then we go home and we are left before we go to sleep every night only with our own thoughts.
Yeah.
So what happens when artists give people that visual, that melody, that quote? What happens when we take that and the things that you've created and I've created and many others, and we use this as a way to restart a conversation?
Yeah.
And that's why I call my methodology orchestrated connecting.
I love it.
Because in its essence, people think of composing symphonies as one of the hardest things to do in the world.
It's
only
a beautiful name.
Only a certain amount of people can write a symphony.
Yeah.
But a symphony is a melody with some chords that you throw to different instruments that you learn where they go.
Right.
And at the essence, it is just as simple as somebody writing a poem, somebody writing a play, somebody running a marathon. It's the act of how we think it's magnified that makes us feel alienated from it. And this is where, when we look at how all of these people want things, what they're doing is they're projecting out everything that seems like the noise.
Right.
And when you take the pause and you take it back to that core, the core is basically the same for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to leave this with your listeners. So David Homan, you are a king and a gentleman because you live by the mission. You don't just profess to it. You live by the mission as, I want to connect other people so they can amplify and interact with each other to make the world great. I love it. You're living the dream. Living it. Yeah.
So it's been such a pleasure to have you here today on the podcast, Orchestrated Relationships. And thank you for being here, and thank you for everyone for listening.
Appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
On my next podcast, stay tuned for the incredible Milton Speed of Full Impact Advisory, who discusses his childhood in Jamaica and how what we see isn't what is underneath. We'll close this podcast with an excerpt from my work, Variations on a Bach's Movement 3, for four amplified cellos. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Orchestrated Relationships, recorded proudly at Smash Studios, edited by Stephen Bartlett. Stay tuned for our next episode.